Hello, and welcome to another episode of Book Echoes, a podcast for authors. Write your way to success. I'm your host, Connie B. Dowell, and this is the 101st episode. If you didn't catch our 100th episode, do go back one because there is still an ongoing giveaway, and you don't want to miss that for a custom ebook cover. But otherwise, I have just been proceeding along in the writing, editing, and design life, and I am really excited to share with you this week's guest, who is on to talk about poetry and imagery. And it's always really interesting to me to interview someone who writes something very different than what I do. I've only ever dabbled in poetry, and really I'm mostly familiar with poetry through working with picture books that are in rhyme and meter. But I think there's a lot that prose writers can learn from poetry as well as aspiring poets. There's a lot that all writers can learn about imagery, which is a really important part of connecting with, getting your audience to connect with your story, making your world feel real. So enjoy this interview with Kim B. Miller, the Poet Laureate of Prince William County, Virginia, and all of the wonderful things she has to say. All right. Well, tonight on the podcast, I am talking to Kim B. Miller. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I'm so excited to talk to you tonight, fellow Virginian and poet laureate of Prince William County. Wow. Yeah. So would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and your writing?
Sure. So my name is Kim B. Miller, and I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York. Native New Yorker, and I've spent most of my life in Long Island, and then I moved to Virginia, and I've always been in Prince William County. I'm married, have two, well, you know, poets can say nothing simple. I have four children, two from the heart, two from the stomach, meaning two I pushed out the old-fashioned way, and two added to my heart through marriage.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you do a lot of different things in the community as well, don't you?
Yes.
A lot of classes and workshops and working mm-hmm. with young people.
Yes.
Yeah. I know you wanted to come on tonight to talk to us a bit about poetry and imagery, which I think is really valuable, not just for people who write in verse, but for prose writers as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely, because your imagery helps people see what you're writing. And people don't think of writing as sight, but if you start thinking it as a sight, then you'll change how you do your imagery.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as we read books, most of us kind of visualize the image in our head. Mm-hmm. So if you were talking to someone who was brand new and is hearing these words and going, imagery, where do I begin?
I tell them to start off with, when I'm teaching or going to a class, I use this particular example. I say, it's raining out. And I say, it's a boring way of saying it, isn't it? And then all the kids, normally say, yeah, that's boring. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, what if I said, I marvel at the storm outside? Mm-hmm. And I go, Storm is a character for Marvel. I marvel. Hey, and Storm controls the weather. Mm-hmm. So I said basically the same thing, but I made it a lot more interesting. And then I connected words that you could understand. Not everybody is a Marvel fan or Storm fan, so they're not going to get that. And that's fine, because it stands alone the way I said it. I marvel at the storm outside. Still works. Mm-hmm. Is that the Marvel folks will be like, I saw what you did there. Another example would be, LeBron James must be dunking on clouds. It is pouring. Same thing. Even if you're not a basketball fan, you know what a dunk is. You mm-hmm. know who LeBron James is. And you can imagine him going up to a cloud and making it rain because of how hard he slammed the ball through. So it's all about telling your story clearly. Because if you're not a Marvel fan, don't use Marvel. If you're not a basketball fan, you don't have to be a basketball fan to know LeBron to use that example. But there's more than one way to say the same thing that different people will get it. Know your audience, because if you're going to people in a certain age group, doesn't mean they don't know it. So don't assume that people don't know it or assume that they do know it. If you're going to do something like that, then do it several ways so that everybody in the audience can be touched. So the point of your imagery is for people to hear what you said without you just going, it was raining. Because then they'd be like, well, okay, it was raining. But if you say, the water dripped at such a pace that by the time I got to my front door, the bottom of my pants leg was soaking. It's all saying the same things, but it's giving someone a visual that they can actually see in their mind of the rain dripping, it getting heavy. For those of us who had this problem at least once in our life, we think about the time, by the time we got to our front door, the bottom of our pants was soaked and how we were trying to get the key in the door. So now we've continued the story for you because we picked it up to where we left off the last time that happened to us. And that's what great imagery can do.
Yeah, doesn't it? That sensory detail. I think the pants leg thing has happened to almost all of us. And it did make me think again about, those wide pants legs that were popular when I was in college. It just soaked up everything. These are great examples of what imagery is. If somebody, again, maybe hasn't incorporated this more intentionally into their work, are there some exercises that they can do to try and encourage this?
Yes, I tell people when you, let's say you've written everything, you read it and you're like, it's not where I want it. This is where you can use several different things you can do. You can go over and look for color. Did I include color or anything? It was raining outside. The blue sky suddenly turned gray. Only thing I added was colors, and still the imagery started to pop. Then take a step by step. Imagery is a process. So a lot of times we're like, well, I wrote, I'm done. Okay, that's fine. Now get us through the process, because you want us to walk almost on a journey with your story so that we're starting to picture it along the way. When I got outside, it was lightly drizzling. So people now are picturing light. It was just turning gray, add a color. You can even add a sound, boom, a bolt of lightning. So all of these things, take whatever you've originally written, add color, add sound, add description, add a story, a step by step. Because sometimes I went and I got to the car. Now, how did you get to the car? What color shoes were you wearing? Did they get mud on them on the way because it was raining? Did you jump over a puddle? Did you jump in a puddle like you used to when you were little? All these little things, these little details, you want to backtrack and add them. So you're going to take your original work, you're going to reread it, and then you're going to throw color, description, and step-by-step narrative in. Not to the point of nauseam, because you don't want to, a 5-minute story to be 2 hours and we haven't even gotten to the car yet. But you do want it to be so that the person can picture something like, my favorite black socks are wet again. Even sometimes that enough, sometimes color is enough. But if you really want to get into detail, start giving us that step by step by step and describing what's around you.
Yeah, absolutely. I love some of your examples, the way that you can add, even when you can't give every single step, sometimes you do need to get to the porch. But these little details of, the black socks are wet, oh no, it can linger over this moment just a tad and make it feel more realistic.
Exactly, and more identifiable for people, mm-hmm. because especially if you pick a common color sock, there's nothing wrong if you pick something, somebody necessarily wouldn't have. My purple, green, and red socks got wet. I love those socks. They're the only ones I have. That still works because it's unique to you. Mm-hmm. And we can picture there. With now everybody's putting, some people are putting a purple at the toe, some people are putting a purple at the heel. So now we're designing the socks in our head just based on the color you gave us.
Yeah, absolutely. And that says something about the character as well. So it's not just the things that are going around that you suddenly connected more with that character.
Exactly, because if I'm wearing multicolored socks, you probably know I like bright, colorful things. So now you're trying to figure out, what is she wearing? Is she wearing purple, red, and shirt? Is, what else is purple on her? So it gives, like you said, a real look into what the character's about. And sometimes people just like the bright socks and everything else is, quote unquote, ordinary. So you never know. You never judge a book by the socks.
Yeah. You never do. It's a great way to add a quirk to someone too, if they were very boring and suddenly they have
Exactly.
these bright colored socks.
Exactly. You would
Yeah.
never think Mr. Smith had on bright colored socks because every day he wears that same boring black suit. But every day peeking underneath the cuff of that pants is a bright pair of socks, a different color.
Yeah. So color, sound, kind of that step by step. And it's something that I think you can train yourself a little bit over time to start noticing more. Are there things that you would recommend that writers do to start noticing more, maybe in the world around them?
Yes, I would definitely say start off with describing something that you think is super simple and elongate the process. Like, what color is the closest flower to you? Of course, you go, whatever. Let's say it was red. Red. Done. No. The flower was about 6 inches high. The stem was long green, slightly bent like it was at an angle. Looks like two or three petals have been blown off by the wind. That's a whole nother description. And you're just going red. So take something simple that you would just go one word answer and then elongate it. And as you start doing that with simple things, it'll start seeping into your writing because you won't just go red, you'll go red with a twice twinge of maroon around the edges of the petal.
And it's those little details that really separate, reading a poem or reading a novel from just reading a description.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So I think that's a great practice for writers to do. It's so easy to get caught up, particularly for those of us who are novelists, and just going from one project to the next without stopping to practice like a musician would.
Yes, practice is really, I know because especially as writers, we just kind of we want to write what we're writing about. Who wants to practice in between? Practice. So who has time for that? She didn't say. I get it, believe me, I get it. But it really helps if you practice so that when you're writing, you don't have to practice and have to edit as much. And I know we all know what that editing process is like. So if I told you you could do a lot less editing, now you're listening. Now you're
Yeah.
here. Yes.
Yeah, anything you can do to make that process, because once you get a project done, you just want to be done. I just want
Yes.
to be done.
Yes. And
Yeah.
believe me, totally get it. Totally. So this is a quicker done by doing
Yep.
these practices because I didn't want to do them either. I'm like, it'll be all right. I'm done now. I'm done.
Yes, I find it so interesting. As you're talking, it occurred to me that there's kind of a dichotomy in some of the ways that writers can do this practice, because sometimes you might practice by slowing down and taking something and short and making it longer and longer. But conversely, there's also a practice that writers can do by taking a piece and making it shorter and then revising it shorter and shorter and shorter. So we get these two extremes to learn two different skills.
Yes, indeed, because you don't, again, you don't want that trip from the house to the car to take 2 hours in your writing process because, unless you write in, an encyclopedia, which, people tend not to read, you want to, so if you want to see who overkill, just think about how can I reduce this? Because if you're telling me how many petals there are, how many drops of rain hit the petal, the surrounding dirt that the pet that the flower is sitting in, the bricks around the dirt around the surrounding brick that the flower is sitting in. You're giving great detail, but decide, I call it, pick your poison. Decide which one of your thing, because we all are picky. I get that. So decide which one of your things you're going to elongate. I have to have this, Kim. I can't cut this down. Okay. Let that one be your nitpicky one that you drill down to infinite. You told us basically how the seed looks. Got it. But then the next time you hit your next thing, you got to skim over that so that everything is not, stretched out to infinity and beyond, as I say.
Especially with describing a new place, the first time is going to be really intense. After
Right.
that, you've been there before.
Exactly. Exactly right.
So Kim, if somebody was listening to this and said, "I'm inspired, I really want to learn more about imagery in poetry," where should they go?
Well, there's really no place. I mean, you can obviously take a class, and I do offer classes sometimes at times, and there's other places people that offer excellent classes. So, classes, one. Two would be to start, first start writing things. So if you go to the class, you'll have something that you can work on. So that way you're not starting from scratch. You're like, well, I've written this and I think it's good, or I think it's bad, or I think I don't have enough imagery, or I think I've imagery this to death. You can come with that to the class and say, this is what I'm working on right now. I'd really like some input. And whatever input you get, I tell people this all the time. Number one, know who you're taking a class from. Anybody can offer a class, doesn't mean it should. So know who you're taking a class from. What is their background? It doesn't mean they have to be an expert at it, but they should be able to tell you something about why they are giving this class. So every time I have a class, I go through a little resume thing, not to nauseam, but just enough that okay, she could teach the class. So ask those questions. Don't be embarrassed to ask those questions, because some people are like, well, I don't want to seem like I'm being, no, you if you especially if you're paying money, ask those questions. Even if it's free, ask those questions, because you don't want to get bad advice, even if it's free. So, that's my thought. Ask. Take classes. If you have someone who you trust to get an opinion from, if you say, well, I'm not really a class person, you can ask someone. But if they're not really a writer, keep that in consideration. Because if you're asking someone who's not a car mechanic, why does your car make that noise? They can give you their best guess, but they're not going to really get you on the path. So if it's not a writer or a poet or someone whose writing is in their veins, you may not get the right answer. And it doesn't mean the person didn't have the best thought at heart, but they can't really help because that's not what they do.
So sound advice there. And I'm really excited that you came on tonight and gave us all a little bit of homework. We've got some stuff to do.
Yes.
So would you like to tell our listeners where we can find you and everything that you do online?
Absolutely. So the thing I left out is I'm the Poet Laureate for Prince William County, Virginia, and I'm the first African American poet laureate for Prince William County. And I've written a couple of books, and I've been in a couple of anthologies also. So that's been really good. Some of my favorite things to write are haiku. And haiku are really short poems, three lines, five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables. So a total of 17 syllables, not words, to make a point. It started in Japan only on Nature and Flowers. Those are traditional haiku. The non-traditional haiku, or senryu, is what they are technically called. But everybody calls everything haiku, so that's why I'm making this distinction. So you'd be like, haiku, oh, that's not on Nature and Flowers. What's she talking about? Is yes, it's really a non-traditional haiku, but since it's in a haiku family, everybody calls them haiku. So I'm known for writing those, and I love writing those because they're very challenging. 17 syllables, that's hard to make a point, but I see. I'm trying to think of one I can give you. Haiku. Strong women are not unbreakable. We just know you ain't the hammer.
Oh, and that was powerful and lots of imagery in a really short space.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's typically what my haikus sound like. And I do write traditional, but most of them are non-traditional. The 2019 Southern Fried Haiku Champion. So I went and to the competition and made it to the end in the finals and won. So I'm really happy about that. And my latest book is called My Poetry is the Beauty You Overlook. And it has 10 poems, 10 chimisms, which are my sayings, and 100 haiku. So all of that you can find on my website, which is kimbmiller.com.
All right, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Book Echoes podcast. I hope you've enjoyed the interview, and I hope that you'll take a little bit of time to do some of the quote unquote homework that Kim has given us. I think exercises like this can really be beneficial to your writing craft. And the lovely thing about writing exercises, writing practice, is that it can take just a very little time. You can do this in 5, 10 minutes and actually make a difference to what you learn as a writer. So I hope you guys will give it a little try this week. And as always, I love to hear from you guys. You can drop me a line, connie@bookechoes.com. And you can also find all the show notes for this and all the episodes, bookechoes.com/show. Don't forget to check out that giveaway before it goes away. That's on the 100th episode page. So that's, I think, going away on Friday morning or Saturday morning. Regardless, it's just a couple more days, so don't miss out on getting a custom vector-based book ebook cover. Or if you'd like to check out my pre-made covers, go to bookechoes.com/shop. And finally, I do have some availability for editorial clients this upcoming month. So if you are looking for someone to edit your book, then check me out there as well, bookechoes.com/services. So until next week, happy writing to all, and happy Mother's Day to those who are celebrating this upcoming weekend. Till next time.